This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Mission, a congregation that seeks to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
Our first reading is from the book of 1 Thessalonians. You know, brothers and sisters, that our visit to you was not without results. We had previously suffered and been treated outrageously in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dared to tell you the gospel in the face of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please people, but God, who tests our hearts. You know we never use flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else. Even though as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority. Instead, we were like children among you. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. The word of the Lord.
All right, good morning again. Last week we started a new sermon series on the book of 1 Thessalonians. That's our second week. 1 Thessalonians is a letter that was written by Paul to the Christians in Thessalonica, a thriving city in Greece. And we talked last week about how we were doing a genre shift. You know, that for the last 6 months as a church, we've been basically living in the gospel passages, stories about Jesus, narrative stories of Jesus's life and death, teachings of straight from Jesus's mouth. But now we are, we're in a letter written by a real person to real people. My question, though, on that front is, when we read letters in the Bible, who are we in the text? You know how, like, that's probably the way that we read the Bible whenever we come to it, is we're kind of looking for ourselves in the story, you know, trying to connect ourselves to someone. What can we learn from this person? We kind of put ourselves in the story. And so, like, we do that with, you know, gospel passages, for instance. Those are pretty easy. You're trying to resonate with one character, you know? You're like, okay, am I the adulterous woman? Or am I the Pharisees who have picked up stones to stone her? You know, who am I in this story? By the way, when some people read the Bible, I think they find themselves resonating with, firstly, with the hero of the story. And, you know, like, so if they read the story of David and Goliath, we're going to do a series on David in the fall, by the way. If they read the story of David and Goliath and they're like, you know what, I'm David in this story. And it's like, oh, really? You are? How convenient that that's the person that you resonate with the most in this story. I mean, some people will even go so far as to, like, try to locate themselves firstly in the person of Jesus when they read these stories. You know, try to, like, find themselves in him and, like, connect with him. And it, like, it's not a bad thing to do, but maybe it shouldn't be the first thing that we do when we come to the Bible, is to try to look for that connection. But what about a New Testament letter? Who are we in a passage read from a New Testament letter? Are we the recipient of the letter? Those kind of complicated, messy Christians that are receiving this letter from their pastor, essentially? Or are we the author, the writer of the letter, the one doing the ministry, sharing the gospel? And by the way, the writer might be messy too, not just the recipients of the letter, okay? But I think the answer to that question of who we should resonate with in a letter from the New Testament is probably both. It's both. We ought to look at it both ways and listen for what God might like to say to us about it, because most likely we are a mix of both. We can see ourselves, like in the gospel stories, we can see ourselves in both the adulterous woman and the Pharisees, right? We're a little bit rebellious and a little bit legalistic, oftentimes simultaneously. We pull that off. We might resonate with the character of David in the David and Goliath story, and we might be a little bit David, but we might want to consider that we might be a little Goliath also. In these New Testament letters, we also are probably a mix of both. We're probably a little bit the Thessalonians, Christians who are trying, but are like a work in progress, a little messy spirituality. Cynical of Paul, critical of some of his ministry, fair or not. Doubters, skeptics, a mixed bag of faithfulness and stubbornness. We can probably all resonate with the recipients of the letter, the Thessalonians. But we are also a little Paul. Paul is out there doing the Lord's work, not just a recipient of the good news, but a worker, a laborer for the good news. Now, I want to underscore that point, that we can be, that we can find ourselves in the person of Paul, because that one is pretty hard for some people to wrap their minds around. You know, I think when we read from Paul, we think of like, wow, Paul is like a super Christian. You know, he is like, he was a pastor and an apostle and a preacher and a teacher and like a professional Christian on a level that I could never attain. And so if there's one person in scripture that I can't resonate with, it's probably Paul. But I think that is, I think that's just not right. I think we need to look for ourselves in the person of Paul. The next series that we're doing after this one, the next letter that we're doing is 1 Peter. And in 1 Peter, Peter says, speaking to the church, he says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. Peter's saying, all of you Christians are a part of God's royal priesthood. The line between being a recipient of God's grace and a worker, a laborer for it, is a blurred line, okay? Now, I understand that people might get the wrong idea about churches like ours, Anglican churches, you know, where a person stands up here and wears a collar on their neck or puts a stole on, that there's only one or two of us up here doing that, and everyone else isn't. Like, does that mean that that we are the workers of God's kingdom and everyone else is a recipient of it? Of course not. Anglicans reject that idea flat out, and maybe even more than other, like, Christian traditions would say, no, the priesthood belongs to all the church. Every person is not just a recipient of God's grace, but a worker, a laborer in God's kingdom. The priest is just simply a servant of God's church. Everyone is a worker in God's kingdom. All of us do that together. And so that's why, I mean, to demonstrate a tiny bit of how that works itself out in Anglicanism, yeah, I stand up here, Trish stands up here, but a lot of other people are going to be up here this morning too. And there are people in kids' ministry, there's people everywhere serving. A lot of people have a job today, okay? And much more even outside of Sunday morning. We are all out there in the world. And not to be just recipients of God's grace, but laborers and workers for it. So in that sense, we are not just the recipients in Paul's letter. We have like some Paul in us doing ministry on God's behalf in the world. Okay. So in this passage, we are a mix of both the stubborn Thessalonians and the earnest Paul. Okay. And what's happening in this passage is that Paul is defending his ministry among the Thessalonians. He's defending his ministry. He has either come under some scrutiny, likely from Jewish religious leaders who are none too pleased that so many people are converting into Christianity, or Paul was just being dismissed in his absence, like questioned in his absence, you know, like, man, yeah, I just don't know about that Paul. Like, the message that he brought, okay, sure, that's one thing, but maybe this Paul, and then, like, by extension, his message, like, maybe he wasn't all he was cracked up to be. And Paul is defending himself, and he starts by saying, like, listen, Thessalonians, in this passage, he starts by saying, look, when Silas and Timothy and I got to Thessalonica, it was amazing. He's like, remember, Thessalonians, like God was doing amazing things among us. There were like fruit, spiritual fruit was being produced among us as we ministered with you. There were great results. And he goes on to say, and to God's credit, we were able to like find the courage to keep spreading God's good news because we had just gotten our hats handed to us in Philippi. But somehow when we showed up in Thessalonica, thanks be to God, he gave us the courage to still proclaim boldly rather than to shrink back. Paul starts by reminding them of that past. And then the heart of Paul's message here is about his motives. That's the subject of our text today, Paul's motives. Why did he come to share with them about Jesus? Paul is asking them, Thessalonians, will you trust me? And the way that he does that is by defending his motives. They might say, we got the message, but we're not so sure about the messenger, Paul. Is there something in it for you, Paul? Is there more to this good news than meets the eye? Is there some hidden agenda, Paul, that you have in bringing the good news to us? And right away, I'll tell you, many people can resonate with that sentiment about religious people. Is there some hidden agenda behind what you are doing? Okay. We're going to talk about Paul's defense of his motives. And there are essentially three accusations that Paul addresses in this passage, and then three defenses. And so, I'm sorry, I know it's Father's Day. This is a six-point sermon. I apologize in advance, but I'm going to cook through it, I promise you, okay? So let's get going here. Okay, the accusations, three accusations. First, flattery. Flattery, that was the first accusation. In verse 5, Paul says, when we came to you and shared the gospel, you know that we never used flattery. And flattery certainly includes what we classically think of as flattery, you know, like kind of puffing up the other person. And especially if you're trying to like get them to buy into something, you kind of puff them up, build them up, get them thinking good about themselves so that they will say yes to whatever you're peddling. And flattery certainly includes that. But flattery here in the New Testament is something more broad than that. It's not as exclusive as that. Flattery also includes essentially like eloquent speaking, slick talk. So Paul is saying, when we came to you, we never used like slick talk. We weren't these like silver-tongued like, you know, prophets or whatever. We came to you, that was never a part of our like motivation or our strategy. Now, for Paul to assert that, to address that accusation and say, you know that we never flattered you. We never like used slick talking speech. The only way that defense can work is if it's true. What I mean to say is like if Paul wrote to them and said, remember how we never slick talked to you? And then if that letter was then read openly out loud to the church in Thessalonica as it was, and if it was also true that Paul and Silas and Timothy had been like slick talkers that were like salesmen essentially, then as soon as that was read out loud, you know how we were never flatterers among you, then the church in Thessalonica, the Christians there would have elbowed each other and side-eyed each other and said, can you get a load of this guy? Can you believe what Paul is writing us from so far away? Oh yeah, right, like he wasn't such a slick talker. It just doesn't, on its face, it doesn't work unless it was true. That when Paul came and Silas and Timothy were in Thessalonica, that they weren't slick talkers, that they weren't. You got to imagine that the church in Thessalonica probably was like, you know what, he's right. They were pretty bad at like slick speaking, you know, like there really wasn't something that they excelled at. So Paul initially says, we were not flatterers. Secondly, nor, Paul says, did we put on a mask to cover up greed. Greed is the second accusation. Paul says, we're not trying to get something out of you. That's not why we came and did this. Again, greed here in this passage does include like money, like squeezing money out of people, but it's more broad than that. It just is like an accusation of wanting more. Like Paul's saying, like we didn't just want more from you. We weren't like oppressive and burdensome in that sense. Always pressing you for more. More money. More work. Write us more letters. More meetings. More burdens. Like, they weren't piling burdens on the Thessalonians, Paul is saying. We never were trying to cover up greed or pressing you for more. Paul says we never had that desire. And that's an important topic for Paul to cover because, as you can imagine, in the first century, there wasn't a lot of disposable income lying around. And so when Paul would ask for support for his ongoing ministry, which he would do, he doesn't do right here in this passage, but which he does do, he's acknowledging them to them, like, I know that I understand this dynamic among us, that you don't have a lot to give, but I'm not just pressing you for more. I'm not just asking for more because I'm greedy. That is not my motive, okay? The third accusation. Twice in this passage, Paul addresses that they are not seeking praise, not seeking praise. So in verse 4, he says, we're not trying to please people, but God. And then in verse 6, we were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else. And that's a real unseen motive, you know, like seeking praise in your ministry, essentially. How would they know if that's actually true, if Paul is seeking praise or if he's not? Well, I would say if Paul's primary motivation for doing this ministry was seeking praise, then his strategy was like very bizarre. Because while Paul would find an audience, a group of people that loved him and would take him in and care for him and probably give him some small amount of praise, I'm sure, while he got some of that in his ministry, he also, remember, just came from Philippi, where he was beaten, imprisoned, and escaped out of town by the skin of his teeth. Now, and he encountered that persecution ongoing for the rest of his life. So for a person, if Paul's primary motivation was to find praise from people, then that he picked a bizarre line of work because he was getting persecuted and almost killed everywhere he went. So Paul's saying that was not a part of our motivation, is to get praise from people. All right. Now, before I go into Paul's defenses, I want to say a word about these accusations. Because let's remember where I started. Who are we in this passage? And we can start by asking that question, are we the Thessalonians in some sense? Are we skeptical about religion and church leaders? Is that us? Somehow it's like weirdly both encouraging and discouraging that the church has been facing this same criticism for 2,000 years now. That the trust in its leaders has been like on the table for this long. Somehow to me that's like, it's both discouraging that that's always a dynamic, but it's encouraging in the sense that it's not new to me, to us now, that this has always been a dynamic of people saying, okay, like I want to believe that message, but can I trust these leaders? And you know why the Thessalonians were so skeptical and cynical about Paul and Silas and Timothy? Because they had a revolving door of people like them in the past. But people who would come through peddling some, new religion, essentially. But people that were making it all about themselves. People that were flattering them and speaking so eloquently and piling burdens on them and squeezing them for more. Those people had been coming through Thessalonica for so long, and so it makes perfect sense why the church in Thessalonica would say, man, can we trust this guy, or is he just like the others? And Paul acknowledges their concerns. This is some of us, too. We have some of these same concerns, skeptical, unsure of Christian leaders. And Paul addresses them and just says from the bottom of his heart, essentially, like, that's not us. It's not us. And like the Thessalonians, we have to decide whether to believe them or not. But Paul begins by acknowledging their concerns. And now he's going to go about the work of trying to defend himself and his motives. Let me try to show you why those things aren't true, Paul is saying. So his defenses, there's three. First, Paul essentially says, we are gods, but not gods plural, gods possessive. We are God's people, Paul is saying. Paul appeals to this idea that this isn't about us. Our ministry among you is not about us. We feel commissioned by God. He says the following things in this passage. We are approved by God. We have been entrusted by God. God is our witness. We are out here by God's will, Paul is saying. We feel commissioned by him. And by the way, Thessalonians, that makes us accountable to him. Meaning, Paul is saying, essentially like, hey, if we are fundamentally greedy, slick talkers who are trying to trick you and deceive you, then we have bigger problems than just being rejected by you. Because God is our witness. We are accountable to God, not just to you. And I know that whole, like, we think we're doing God's will here has been grossly misused and is, I'm sure, triggering for many people. I get that. But that is, like, the first leg of Paul's defense, is he is appealing to, like, this isn't about us. We are really trying to do God's will here. Second, Paul says, we have been so gentle among you. We've been so gentle in our ministry to you. Paul, at the end of this passage, says, not only have we not been overbearing to you, trying to squeeze out everything that we can get and get more from you, not only have we not been that, we've been meek and gentle among you. He says, we've been like young children with you. And then in the same breath, I don't know if you noticed this, but in the same breath, Paul also says, and we're also like a nursing mother. Isn't that odd that Paul would go from like, we are like young children and we are like nursing mothers in our care for you? And there's different ways to read that and kind of interpret. What's he trying to say there? Is he saying, is it possible to be both of those things? And my favorite way of reading it is to say yes, that you can be both of those things. Is there such a person that is a nursing mother but acts like a small child? Yes, every mother that has ever existed. You know, like, we all know, like, in witnessing a mom care for her baby or toddler or young child, like, they make themselves like a young child. It's the whole Gucci, Gucci, Goo thing, you know? Like, the speaking to them and, like, baby talk, the getting down on the floor with your young children, that is a way in which a nursing mother becomes like a young child. Comes down to their level and meets them and cares for them in that way. And that isn't condescending, by the way. We would never say that a mother is condescending by, like, getting down and meeting the child on that level. It's care. That's how we care for one another, is by meeting each other where we are. And that's what Paul says they've done. We've come to you and met you like a young child and like a nursing mother to care for you. Thirdly, his third defense is that we have been authentic, Paul says, authentic. Lastly, Paul says, the best proof that I can give to you that our motives are clear when we came to you, and that we really came to you to share with you the good news, the love and grace of Jesus Christ, is that we have been authentic. We have been ourselves. Remember a second ago, we talked about how Paul says we didn't put on a mask when we were with you. We didn't pretend to be somebody that we're not. We were just ourselves. Earlier in the passage, it says we weren't trying to trick you. And that phrase, trick you, is like a fishing lure. You know, like fundamentally not what it's pretending to be, and a trap. And Paul's saying, oh my gosh, no. We were just ourselves. We were authentically ourselves when we lived and ministered among you. The certificate of that is that we shared our lives with you, Paul says. We didn't just share our words, we shared our very lives. We've opened up ourselves to you. In an effort to deserve your trust, we opened up and shared our actual lives. Now, that is the point at which we should switch lenses and like resonate with Paul. We should look at it from that perspective, to see ourselves, not just in the Thessalonians, but in Paul, to connect our ministry in the world to his. We are called to live our lives in like attempt to do God's will, you know, to like, God is my witness. I am like trying to follow him. That should be our ministry too. We should be gentle in our ministry, meeting people where they are, like nursing children, like nursing mothers and young children all together. That should characterize our ministry in the world. And we should not just share our words, but we should open up our lives in authenticity to others. Those were marks of Paul's ministry, and may they be marks of our ministry in the world too. Amen.